one to just sort of, you know, put the cart before the horse or sort of flip things. You know, the purpose is good chemistry, you know, and, you know, hopefully we'll get some good people. But really what I think it is that good chemistry is the result of really supporting your people.
Welcome to Spilling the Chemist's Tea. I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Hall, the Director of Education, Outreach, and Diversity for the Center for Selective CH Functionalization, or CCHF, a National Science Foundation Center for Chemical Innovation. Today, I'm talking to Dr. Julian West, an assistant professor at Rice University. He was part of the center as a graduate student in the Sorensen Lab at Princeton, but then also a postdoc in the Stokes Lab at Caltech. I'm excited to hear what he has to say. So, who are you? What are your pronouns?
So I'm Julian West. My pronouns are he and his, and I am a assistant professor at Rice University, really looking at catalysis and organic chemistry, sort of how can we make better chemical reactions, new chemical reactions that ideally are using some more sort of sustainable elements and reaction conditions. For this interview, I think it's important to say that that one of the really key parts of my grad school experience was being part of this NSF Center for Selective CH Functionalization, which I joined right in my first year of grad school and stayed in until I defended my PhD in 2017. So had a lot of chances to interact at Emory and other places. And, you know, really, really, in my view, it just had a tremendous impact on my trajectory, my approach to science and to mentoring as well.
That's great to hear, because that's part of why people do things that I do. And we try to make sure that, you know, that this works as well for everybody in the center.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where did you grow up? What was your first experience with science?
Right. So I guess my first experience with science and growing up sort of hits a little close to home for chemistry insofar as actually, both my parents are chemists. So they were actually a grad school couple at the University of Wisconsin. And by the time I was born, my parents were professors of chemistry at the University of Utah. So my dad, more research active, and my mom, very teaching active. I think it did have a big effect to, you know, see my parents, you know, in these roles, you know that not only, you know, is this possible, but, you know, this is maybe something that I could do too. You know, I inherently sort of felt like I sort of belonged to that world by proxy of my parents. And, you know, I think that really that sense of belonging was very powerful for me, you know, not facing a lot of barriers that other people coming into chemistry might face. So, but specifically, you know, if I were to think about science or chemistry, in particular, the first thing that I really remember as a little kid, you know, way back in the old days, is going into the chemistry building with my dad, and he stopped us off at the NMR room, you know, which is full of these huge instruments. You know, it's a shiny metal big canister, you know, looked like a giant garbage can, making all this noise. You know, back then the magnets weren't really shielded, so you couldn't go beyond the door. But yeah, you know, and he went in there and got a little doer of liquid nitrogen and spilled it at my feet. And I was, you know, freaking out. But it was okay. You know, it's just a little LN2. But yeah, no, that was really cool, you know, and definitely, you know, made a lasting impression. But yeah, no, it's interesting. You know, despite all of that, I really wasn't that interested in being a chemist specifically, you know, in part, you know, being an apple that wanted to fall a little further from the tree, at least when I was a teenager. But yeah, you know, when it came to undergrad, you know, and I was taking my first year, you know, sort of science prereqs across everything, you know, everything was interesting, but, you know, it was just suddenly at that level, once I started doing organic chemistry, it like made sense. You know, it made sense in a way that like, you know, equilibria and, you know, sort of electroanalytical chemistry or, you know, balancing equations that, you know, you do in high school chemistry just, you know, really didn't grab me very much. But,
yeah,
you know, this idea of, you know, we're drawing pictures, we can rationalize what's happening based on these models or based on how we illustrate things, you know, the SN2, it's like, oh, look, it's inversion of stereochemistry, you know, this has to be an SN2. Like, that was amazing, like that you can sort of do that deductive, you know, that just little piece of sort of reasoning based on that little observation.
Speaking of undergrad, you know, when and why did you decide to go to graduate school?
You know, again, having two parents with PhD degrees, you know, graduate school always felt like an option, perhaps a little bit unlike my parents, at least starting in undergrad. I wasn't at the top of all of my classes. In fact, in the math classes, I was towards the bottom, which was a little bit stressful at times and, you know, really did sort of make me wonder, you know, at times in undergrad, you know, do I even want to finish this? You know, in my sophomore year of undergrad, Christmas, you know, I made this conversation with myself, or, you know, I made this sort of bet with myself that, you know, if I passed multivariable calculus, I would stay in undergrad. And if I didn't, you know, maybe this isn't something that I want to do. It was hard, but, you know, in the end, I just barely passed that course. And that really, you know, at that point, it's, you know, let's give this a try and, you know, see what happens. But yeah, for deciding for graduate school, you know, so after my third year, after my junior year at UBC, you know, I was really starting to enjoy a lot of my chemistry classes. You know, I was doing pretty well, and, you know, and I was started to think again, you know, like, oh, you know, I'll definitely finish this undergrad. Maybe I could do grad school. And at that point, I think one of the really, really key things in my trajectory was getting to work with my honors project supervisor at UBC, Dr. Glenn Samus, who was this really, you know, really enthusiastic sort of assistant professor of organic chemistry, you know, sort of coming up for tenure in the next year or so. So, you know, I had heard that he's this great teacher. And, you know, one thing that I found there, you know, in talking to Glenn and then in working in his lab is that I really think that, you know, this same sort of approach to teaching, you know, goes hand in hand with really, really good research and also with, again, you know, developing people, helping people to, you know, achieve their potential and maybe even potential they didn't think that they had, you know, and not doing this in a pushy, forceful way, but in a sort of optimistic sort of, you know, let's explore, you know, what you can be. Again, I came to Glenn with not the best CV, but, you know, I was really interested in organic chemistry and he was willing to, you know, take me on for a summer, you know, sort of see what happened, you know, see where my interest took me. And yeah, and as the summer went on and, you know, I was really, really enjoying it, you know, really, really loving the people in that lab and interacting with with him, you know, he said, I think you should, you know, think about applying to some American grad schools. So I guess to back things up. So I was born in Utah, lived in Utah up until I was 10. And then we all moved to Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So I did a lot of my schooling in Edmonton, and then I did my undergrad in UBC in Vancouver. So, you know, at that point, I was sort of thinking of myself more Canadian than American. And I was sort of thinking, you know, maybe I'll go to a Canadian grad school or try to go to one, you know, which are great schools for sure. But you know, a lot of them don't necessarily have the same sort of cachet for, you know, better or worse as, you know, some of the American schools. Yeah. So, you know, Glenn was a alum of Harvard, and he had postdoc at Princeton and with Eric Sorensen, and he said, you know, yeah, I think you should, you know, give applying to these places a shot. And, you know, and that really sort of gave me a lot more confidence doing that. You know, we sort of sat down in this long, you know, 2-hour meeting, and basically, you know, he put a list of schools, you know, that he thought were good for organic chemistry, you know, that had really good mentors at them, and we talked about each one, whittled down the list until you know, it was a reasonable number. Yeah. And then after that meeting, you know, which I think was in July, you know, suddenly, you know, it was tangible, you know, I'm going to be applying to grad schools, and not just any grad schools, but, you know, the ones that have the famous names. You know, again, as I've gotten older and older, hopefully wiser and wiser, and also just seeing a lot of places, really the level of science pretty much anywhere is really, really good. You know, definitely one thing as a undergrad, you know, and I think it's tough to sort of to break out of this or to really have good perspective on it. But, you know, definitely, you know, it sounds cliche, but a name, you know, these famous names, you know, famous rich places or whatever, you know, that doesn't mean that you're going to be doing better science. And it doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to have a better environment for developing, you know, as a person and as a scientist there. So, you know, definitely I was very lucky and fortunate.
Well, what did you like the most and the least about grad school?
For the most, I would say, you know, there are a few things there, but, you know, a lot of them really to do with my involvement with the NSF CCHF, which was just really, you know, a transformative experience for a young graduate student. You know, I first got involved first year. I was thinking about potentially synthesizing this molecule, and, you know, in conversations with some of my lab mates who are part of the CCHF, now they're like, oh yeah, you know, that seems like something that that's similar to something that Jinquan Yu's lab is working on, or, you know, or this thing might be similar to something that Hugh Davis's lab is working on. And, but there wasn't exactly the right kind of reaction there, but, you know, it's like, oh, you know, maybe CH functionalization could be really cool here. So my first experience semi-officially with the center was actually presenting at one of these, you know, sort of virtual meetings. So this was the disconnection strategies meeting, which at the time was being run by Jin. Yeah, so I threw together this little PowerPoint, this idea, you know, I had no idea what these meetings were even about. And, you know, this was the pre-COVID days when, you know, when these virtual meetings were kind of new and kind of, ooh, technology, fancy and mysterious. But yeah, you know, it worked really well presenting that. And what was really cool after that is that heard from Jin, you know, it's like, yeah, I haven't published this yet, but, you know, we have this sort of reaction that we're working on that, you know, could really potentially work for that molecule. you know, just sort of getting that sort of insider access and, you know, and also, you know, not only learning about this research there, but also helping to motivate and push it forward in another lab as well. And, you know, similarly with the Davis lab, you know, they had, again, a reaction like that very close to being developed. What I'll say, spoiler alert there, is that ultimately I wasn't able to push that project forward all the way to the end while I was a graduate student. But what was really cool, or what is really cool about one of these sort of sustained sort of funding models like the center, is that actually I heard from Eric and one of the new students in his lab that just, I think it was just earlier this year, they were finally able to finish that molecule, you know. And this is something that, you know, wouldn't be possible at all on, you know, a sort of 3-year NSF standard grant. You know, we're talking 8 years ago that we were first talking about this experiment. So, you know, I think that was really cool being involved there at the start. But then from there, you know, so my first experience was through the science, but I think where I did the most development and growth and, you know, and really just sort of direction was through, you know, sort of subsequent involvement with the center. So one thing that was really cool, few cool things. So one is the sort of annual meetings and site visits for the center. I think to the huge credit of the center, how they set up these events, you know, and the people that chose to join and were chosen to be invited. You know, I think that there was a big effort on everybody's part to really build it as a community, you know, to really foster this sense of belonging, you know, that you're part of this big effort to do really cool science, of course, but also to develop people and, you know, and really realize yourselves as, you know, members of the global community. So it was wonderful and fantastic, you know, to, you know, network, but, you know, also develop these really strong friendships and, you know, and be able to connect with the people behind the science. You know, that was really cool.
What did you like least about graduate school?
I mean, graduate school can be, you know, even in the best of circumstances, I think it can be really, really challenging. So one thing that I found very difficult in graduate school, well, probably the biggest one was negotiation, you know, ongoing discussion with work-life balance and really how to deal with, at times, you know, what are very extreme external pressures that you can internalize yourself. So in my first 2 years in graduate school, I would say that I was working, you know, probably between 55 and 60 hours a week, most weeks, which, you know, is lower than the numbers that some people throw around.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I'd say is that for me, that schedule was terrible. That was so punishing. I just had no time to do anything. I was so stressed. And, you know, honestly, you know, I was getting some research results, but, you know, I was just, you know, not very quickly. And it was just not sustainable. You know, I was 30 pounds heavier than when I joined grad school. You know, I just wasn't really, I didn't even really like thinking about chemistry at that point. You know, and there was just this feeling of this huge pressure of, you know, oh, I've got to, you know, keep up, you know, this is at this place. And, you know, what I ended up doing after that is, you know, as I actually started running again, which I hadn't done since really the beginning of undergrad a lot, you know, and it was slow. It was, you know, I started, you know, let's just try running a mile, you know, let's try doing, you know, 3 miles a week, slowly pushing that up. You know, definitely I got older since undergrad, so couldn't go too quickly or else my knees let me know. So I started just really regularly, you know, making the time for running and, you know, just really doing it and, you know, leaving lab early enough to run. And what was really cool about it were a few things. So one is that, you know, it you know, sort of limited me. So I'm not doing these 11-hour days. So it stopped those, which was super powerful. But also, it, you know, and it did exercise, which is good for health. But the other really cool thing that I really enjoyed about, you know, especially the start of it was, you know, just that sort of sense of progression of, you know, sort of even if it feels like, you know, the science isn't going anywhere or you have no idea what's going on, you know, it's today when I'm going for my run, I'm going to try to run another block. You know, I'm going to try to run another half mile before taking a break or something, you know, and, or, you know, I'm going to try to do this a little bit faster. Yeah. And actually having this thing where I know that, you know, with the effort, or I knew with the effort that I could make sort of regular process or progress and grow in my abilities was a huge, you know, sort of, I guess, counterbalance to the sort of, you know, stochastic nature of grad school where, you know, in really speculative projects or even safe projects, you have no idea whether, you know, it'll actually work. Because if we did, we wouldn't do it. So,
yep.
So having this area of my life where I could make meaningful and consistent progress, you know, and also just take myself out of the lab, you know, out of the, you know, more competitive atmosphere was really, really empowering. And that's something that, you know, I've kept up since then. And then also, you know, I picked up the piano again, you know, got cool. a little keyboard. Yeah, you know, between running and piano, you know, suddenly I had these things that, you know, were able to sort of pull out of that sort of all-consuming grad school. And in taking those breaks, what I found is that, you know, I had the space not only to sort of think of new ideas and, you know, break out sort of the survival mindset rut of, you know, only planning to the next experiment, you know, yeah. Actually have some cool ideas, but also, honestly, I just made less physical mistakes in lab.
Yeah. In that same vein about work-life balance, you know, now you get to advocate for that for your students and in the field as a professional scientist and do your own science communication. So would you talk a little bit about your work with that?
Try my best to really communicate this to the group. You know, is really the number one most important thing is, you know, everyone's health, happiness, and ability to grow, not just as scientists, but as people. And,
yeah.
You know, and I'm trying to develop holistically as well. But yeah, you know, definitely in my group, you know, there's, you know, we have people with a range of interests, you know, one group member loves to watch horror movies, you know, one plays the violin and is going to join a community orchestra. And these are really, really cool things that, you know, I'm always excited to hear about. And I really encourage them to do. Similarly, you know, I really, again, emphasize again and again and again that there are no set hours in the group, that figuring out, you know, for each person, you know, what sort of makes sense, but, you know, not holding people to, you know, you have to be here 9 to 5 or, you know, 9 to 11, like yeah. Some places I've been, but, you know, also, you know, again, you know, keep that flexibility, but, you know, always make sure, you know, again and again to bring up that, you know, we're not going to be working all the time in this lab because it's just not good for any of us.
How did you decide to become a professor in the first place?
Connecting to what we were talking about way at the beginning. So, you know, coming from a, you know, academic family always made it feel accessible and like, you know, maybe I could be part of that world. But, you know, when it came to, you know, wanting to do the sort of research professor, you know, tenure track position, you know, I'd say the single biggest motivator has been in response to my own experiences and observations as somebody who went through this training system. Again, I was really fortunate to work with Eric, to have these fantastic opportunities like the CCHF. And then after PhD, I again worked with a center PI, Brian Stoltz at Caltech, but also with another center's PI, Harry Gray from CCI Solar. So I sort of got to interact with another NSF Center for Chemical Innovation. And all of these researchers are just outstanding mentors, which was one, an inspiration to this idea, you know, seeing and hearing about, you know, some of my peers' experiences and, you know, some of my own experiences, despite, you know, my mentor's best efforts. Really, I want to do this position to try to do, you know, to try to push forward mentoring, try to keep pushing myself to be a better mentor, to try to inspire others to take the same journey. And ultimately to try to, you know, really help and support students, you know, to develop, you know, in my group and in the department as well. Yeah, just trying, I'd say really, yeah, trying to push the culture of organic chemistry a lot more, you know, in the direction that, you know, for instance, the CCHF has pushed it in, you know, collaborative rather than competitive, and, you know, human-centered rather than results-centered.
Exactly. Well, has the job been what you imagined it would be?
You know, in some ways, I'd say that it's been, yeah, it's sort of matched up with some expectations. So, you know, when I was a student and a postdoc, I got the chance to work with a lot of undergrads and junior students, and I really enjoyed that, and I'm still enjoying that a lot. So that definitely matched up with you know, what I was hoping for. The sort of more PI type aspects of applying for grants, submitting papers, you know, definitely had a little bit of sort of indirect exposure to that as a trainee. So I knew a little bit about that. But yeah, definitely, you know, it's great when, you know, things get accepted or approved. But yeah, it definitely, you know, it maybe stings a little bit more when things don't, then, you know, when you're a student. Yeah, it feels a little bit closer to home when you're the last name on, you know, that. You know, one thing that I've loved, so similar to Glenn, Eric, Brian, and Harry Gray, I've really loved teaching. It's just so fun to, you know, get in front of people and, you know, get them thinking and, you know, try to get them excited about organic chemistry. And most importantly of all, you know, I'd say the best part of teaching, you know, at the end is, you know, is when you're looking at the final projects or the final exams, and, you know, and you see those students who, you know, maybe came in with, you know, a little bit less of a background in the subject, or you know, or a little bit less interest in the subject, and you just see, wow, you know, they like, they mastered these concepts, you know, they learned so much from when they came into the course. And, you know, that's a huge, it makes you feel like you're doing something that matters.
Yeah. You know? And that's all you can ask for. What do you think the future of science is, and what is your role in that future?
I guess, generally speaking, you know, I do think that, you know, it's sort of the future generally, or at least I hope, you know, will move a lot more in this direction that, you know, these sort of center grants have been moving us towards, you know, which is really this idea of sort of collaborative projects, you know, which allows us to bring so many different skill sets together to do really, really cool, you know, work on really difficult problems. But, you know, I think the other thing that it does, which, you know, we maybe implicitly appreciate, but, you know, I think for me has been so important, is also collaborative mentoring. You know, so then basically your development as a scientist and, you know, and also as a sort of person is not tied completely, you know, to your research. It's not handled completely by one person who, you know, decides your fate completely.
So now for the lightning round or a high throughput round, we're trying to figure out like chemistry names for things for this. So we'll see if it sticks. What is your favorite hot drink?
Probably it's got to be coffee. I really do like a nice cup of fancy coffee.
What would you be if you weren't a scientist?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I've always really loved writing a lot. Mm-hmm. And actually, from the support of, you know, and the flexibility of my mentors, I actually got the chance to write for a few non-scientific venues. So, cool. So I got a article published in The Atlantic and, you know, won Science's Working Life and stuff. So I've always really enjoyed that, you know, and done a little bit of that on and off, maybe a professor of writing. But I do really love writing.
What piece of lab glassware would you be?
I guess, you know, maybe it's not exactly glassware, but, you know, maybe I would be maybe like the monkey bars behind the reaction. So, you know, I want to be something that's firm, sort of foundation or anchor that, you know, people can attach, you know, their experiments to. Also to be like another thing in mentoring I really want to be is flexible and responsive to everybody's needs. So one thing that, you know, is maybe obvious, but, you know, is still really interesting is everybody's a different person and, you know, and they need different things and they need different things at different times. So, you know, trying to be adaptable to that, you know, like monkey bars are, you know, you can set up a distillation, you can set up, you know, five reactions, you know, whatever it takes to do it safely and to be able to rely on it.
What's your favorite place in the world?
I don't know. I guess it's like a little bit hokey, but, you know, wherever I can be with my partner. Lots of places are fun with that.
Mm-hmm. Hokey, but true. If you could have any superpower, which would you choose? And you could make one up. One of my best friends from grad school said that he wants like mass spec vision.
You know, one power that I think would be super that, you know, I'd at least like to work towards is, you know, for anybody coming for advice or guidance or anything like that, to know what they need to hear and to be able to say it.
What is your favorite part of being a professor?
You know, in sort of two words, you know, it's the people. It's you know, being able to interact with a lot of especially the younger scholars, the grad students, the postdocs, the undergrads. And as a professor, I think one of the really cool things is to interact with them in a sort of longer time scale as well. So, you know, it's not just one interaction, but, you know, someone's taking your course, you're interacting for a semester or more. You know, somebody's a graduate student, you'll be interacting for, you know, 4 or 5 years probably. And, you know, just being able to learn about them as people and then also, you know, see them evolve over time, mm-hmm. you know, and hopefully help to, you know, water their flower, you know, and see how they grow, I think is really, really cool.
What's your least favorite part of being a professor?
You know, I'd say again that rejection is hard, you know, no matter what level you're at. You know, those definitely can take a few days to recover from. But another thing that is difficult is, you know, is I definitely talk a big game and I'm committed to, you know, this idea of, you know, of again, you know, trying to demonstrate a more sort of person-centered, you know, and if you will, humane approach, to, you know, to doing science, you know, organic chemistry in a field that, you know, is traditionally not not really emphasize that as much. You know, this is how they say that you should do it, you know, and I'm not doing it this way. You know, am I doing it right? You know, am I on the right path? I feel that personally sometimes, but, you know, but when I look at, you know, the members in my lab and sort of see what we've accomplished and what we could accomplish, you know, then I feel much more resolved.
Do you have a piece of advice for students that would like to become a professional scientist?
Yeah, my biggest piece of advice, you know, is to, you know, no matter what goal you're going for, you know, make sure that you are focusing or that you are developing yourself, you know, and allowing yourself to develop in sort of all aspects of your life, because these things are synergistic, they're connected. You know, if you're just focusing on the science or the experiments, at least in my experience and in that of a lot of my peers, you know, that is a very counterproductive path to go down, at least in the long term. And if you take time for yourself as someone outside of the lab, then you'll give yourself the space to also actually be able to grow in the lab as well. What person do you want to be remembered as? What do you want your contribution to be, big or small?
Yeah.
And, you know, the number one thing I'd like to be remembered by or for is, you know, is again, just being a good mentor, you know, being someone who helped people to, you know, to achieve what they wanted to do.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Personally, you can find me most easily on Twitter. So that's at Pushing Arrows, all one word. You know, again, wearing that organic chemistry background on my sleeve. We have our research group website at westchem.org. which definitely you can find if you search. It's on the Rice website as well. And I'm also on LinkedIn. So I should pop up in a search. I think my URL is LinkedIn/in/Julian G. West, all one word. You know, definitely if anyone wants to connect, you know, send an invite there.
Thank you again. And I hope you have a fantastic week.
Yeah, I hope you do as well. And thank you so much.
To find us on the internet, check out nsf-cchf.com or at nsf-cchf on Twitter and Instagram. And find me at rachelshall.com or Rachel S. Hall on Twitter. This episode was produced with help from Kevin Gonzalez, Nick Garcia, and Rio Febrian. Show art by Rio Febrian. Show theme written by Nick Garcia. And show edited by me. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join us next time.